This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for an evening of contemporary dance, an exhibit of rare photographs, or a healing experience through the music of jazz. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. While most of us are preparing for Thanksgiving turkey with all the trimmings, Christmas cocktails spread cheer in the marigny. Sounds like an invite to belly up to the bar, but not that kind of bar. It's actually the latest production from the Marigny Opera Ballet, featuring a premiere work with an international flair. Artistic director Dave Hurlburt and pianist Larry Siebreth are here. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thanks, Diane.
Good to be here.
Let's talk about this new dance. What's the name of it and how did it come to be?
The premiere in the show is called Aguas de Dezembro, and that's Portuguese, Brazilian, for the waters of December. A new ballet choreographed by Diogo de Lima, and Larry has composed the music for it.
What was challenging for you, Larry?
The challenge was to include Christmas themes and fragment them in ways that they weren't perceived literally, and to also include original material, and then wrap the whole thing in a combination of classical composition and Brazilian rhythms.
So we might not recognize the traditional Christmas themes as we know them.
The idea I was going for was to try to make them allude to the songs, but changing harmonies and sometimes extracting fragments of the melodies and turning those melodic ideas into larger compositional forms that also contained original music. So you get the illusion of Christmas wrapped up in an original framework.
So let's talk more about this Brazilian Christmas. I'm not sure I know what Christmas in Brazil is like. What will we experience?
When we came up with the concept, I'd asked Diogo to create a holiday-themed premiere for this program, and he was a bit reluctant. We got Larry involved, and we thought that it would be a great idea to do something to Brazilian jazz. I was very excited, and I said, Diogo, this is our chance to learn about Brazilian holiday music. I don't know anything about the music people in Brazil listen to in the holidays. And Diogo said, the same music everybody listens to. We don't have any special Brazilian Christmas music because in Brazil, it's the height of the summer and people celebrate the holidays by going to the beach. So that was the problem we had to solve. How do we breathe fresh new life into our holiday standards? And that's what Larry's done. The answer is you make them Brazilian. Who would have thought? And so what we're doing is a holiday celebration on the beach in Brazil.
Talk a little bit about the choreography and what we're going to see.
Diogo has a very distinctive choreographic style. It's a blend of ballet, contemporary, Brazilian, very complex and elegant style. When he started to choreograph, he wasn't sure how many of our dancers were going to be in the piece. So he came to the opera house, conducted a class, putting them through the hoops, and at the end of it, he decided all 11 of them are so good, he's using all of them in his piece. So it's the entire company. The piece is about 25, 30 minutes, and it's a beautiful collection of solos, duets, ensemble work. At one point in the ballet, all of the men in the company are on their backs, filling the stage, and they begin sliding and extending their legs across the floor, and it looks like waves on the beach. The women enter and walk through the waves, which is a beautiful moment. And that inspired the name of the piece, Aguas de Dezembro, the waters of December.
It sounds quite inviting.
I think so, too.
Now, you are bringing back two award-winning numbers to round out the program.
Yes, we have two beautiful ballets from 2015. One of them, by Maritza Mercado Narcis, is called I Was Told There'd Be Cake, which is a humorous, witty holiday piece. That one actually won Gambit Award for 2015. Now, that piece is a big New Orleans party scene. with some of the guests celebrating Kwanzaa, others Hanukkah, and yet others Christmas. Everyone has a bit too much to drink. The second piece, also from 2015, is by choreographer Nikki Hefko. And that piece is called Diversorios, which is the word for an Italian nativity scene, or creche, especially from the 18th century. These are little figurines that villagers across southern Italy and southern France put together for the holidays. And the figurines represented themselves. So you'd have a figurine of a baker or a butcher or a farmer or a grandmother, little kids. And they'd set these figurines out around Christmas in the form of a procession, all of them pilgrims, all of them leading to the nativity scene, to the Holy Family. And that was Nikki's inspiration. The music for Nikki's piece, as well as for Moritz's, is Baroque music by George Frideric Handel and Arcangelo Corelli, performed live by the Palimnia Quartet with the addition of a double bass and a harpsichord.
How are you hoping to connect with audiences this holiday season?
I think during the holidays, there should be more dancing. We have the Nutcracker, which is glorious. The Nutcracker has become sort of a rite of passage and even a ritual. People love going to that to see their niece or their daughter, their cousin performing, and it's always a lovely thing. I think Christmas cocktails fills the gap. One of my earliest thoughts about this program was, well, okay, the parents go to the Nutcracker, they come home. Now what do they do to relax and really celebrate? Well, they would have a Christmas cocktail. And that's what we tried to do with this. We wanted to do something fresh, something that looks more spontaneous, something elegant, something that adults will actually like. Kids will like this too, but it's not about the kids. It's mostly about adults. Adults having a party somewhere in the Bywater for the holidays. Adults as a community on a pilgrimage, or flirtatious adults at the beach in Brazil.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Marigny Opera Ballet Artistic Director Dave Hurlburt and pianist Larry Sieber, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having us.
Save the date. The Marigny Opera Ballet presents Christmas Cocktails. Performances run December 1st through 3rd at the Marigny Opera House, 725 St. Ferdinand Street. In the interest of full disclosure, I am a member of the Marigny Opera House Foundation Board. The New Orleans Museum of Art is offering a rare look at how photography recorded New Orleans and regions as far away as New York's Niagara Falls. They were taken in the 19th century, one as early as 1839. That age is one reason they're so delicate. Many won't be seen again for decades. The exhibit is called East of the Mississippi, 19th Century American Landscape Photography. WWNO's Eileen Fleming spoke with the show curator.
I'm here with Russell Lord, the curator of the New Orleans Museum of Art Photograph Collection. Tell me about the collection.
Well, the collection of photographs is one of the best in the country. It now numbers almost 14,000 photographs from the beginnings of photography to the present.
And how did this show come to be East of the Mississippi, 19th Century American Landscape Photography?
We're very excited about this show. This is a show that we have co-organized with the National Gallery of Art in Washington. It was presented there in the spring, and it is now on display here until January 7th, and we are the only two venues to present this show. The show is curated by my colleague Diane Wagner at the National Gallery, and she invited me onto the project about 4 years ago. She had already been working on it for 2 years, and it's the first show to take a comprehensive look at photography of the American landscape in the 19th century from the very beginnings. Some of the oldest photographs in the United States are in this exhibition, to the very end of the century.
You know, when I think of a photograph from that era, I think of Ken Burns and the Civil War and the black and white photography, and then the music starts and the camera pans. What am I going to say here?
Well, you will see some Civil War landscapes, actually. That is a chapter in the show. The show is organized into six different sections. The first section is the origins of photography in this country. It shows when photography arrived from Europe for the first time in 1839. It's over 175 works in the show, and they were pulled from over 30 different either private or institutional lenders. Going through the show, the chronology, it begins at the beginning. It looks at the relationship between painting and photography in the 19th century. There's two sections about photographs that document changes to the American landscape, so building of the railroads, building of bridges, building of towns and cities. There are urban landscapes in this show. And then, of course, there is a chapter about the role that landscape photography played in the Civil War as a means of communication and as a means of documentation. And then the exhibition closes with photographs made by photographers who were interested in promoting tourism or promoting preservation of the wilderness. So these two kind of opposing goals.
Are there any examples from the NOMA collection?
There are about 6 to 8 works, I think, from our permanent collection in the show. The show has been a little bit different in each space. There were some things that lenders agreed to lend only to one institution because they were so fragile. So Diane and I made the decision for what things would be shown in Washington and what would be shown here. And one of the decisions that we made here was to expand the section that represents New Orleans and the surrounding area.
Well, let's go.
Sure. We have this one really wonderful long wall of pictures that are all New Orleans or the surrounding area. And so we'll go and begin with the first one on the wall.
Okay.
This is a picture by J. Dearborn Edwards, who made the oldest known paper photographs in New Orleans. And we're looking at the cotton wharves of New Orleans. And in the foreground, you see huge bales of raw cotton that are waiting to be taken to various destinations, and they will be taken by this row of steamships that's almost incredible. It looks like they're jockeying for parking back there.
It's forest-like.
Absolutely, with these smokestacks rising up into the sky. I haven't even tried to count how many ships there are, but there's at least a dozen, probably more, waiting to take cotton to various places up and down the river and probably through the Gulf.
This looks familiar.
It will surprise some to realize that this is Claiborne Avenue. So the architecture is familiar, but it no longer exists along Claiborne. This is Claiborne around Common Street, which, of course, is a vast intersection of highways and tall office buildings now. You've got a dirt road, you've got a beautiful wide sidewalk with trees, and you have two-story colonnaded residences stretching down the street in 1858 to 1861. The next one we're looking at, also by J. Dearborn Edwards, this picture is of Esplanade Avenue at Royal Street looking up towards the lake. And we went down there recently to look at this corner, and we're pretty sure that the only thing that is exactly the same that remains from this picture from 1858 is one of these trees, these beautiful oak trees that had recently been planted.
So would the mint be to my left?
Yes, the mint would be over here, kind of actually right here outside of the picture frame. But you are standing right behind Royal Street looking up the neutral ground, essentially. This next piece is a new acquisition that we purchased a couple of years ago. And it's of a steamship docked somewhere along the Mississippi River near New Orleans. But what's exciting about this picture is that this particular steamship is the one that was piloted by Samuel Clemens, a.k.a. Mark Twain, for about a month after he got his riverboat pilot's license. He piloted it from Natchez down to New Orleans and back a few times. And although we can't make out any of the faces, there is a group of people positioned next to the steamship posing. And they're all wearing hats. This picture was probably made at noon, so the sun is coming straight down, and their faces are completely in shadow. But I like to think that Mark Twain is in there somewhere.
Well, let's just say. Russell Lord, the curator of NOMA's photography collection, thank you very much.
It's been an honor. Thank you, Eileen.
The show continues through January 7th. More info at noma.org. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. New Orleans is the birthplace of jazz, and now the healing power of that indigenous music is being explored. Could it help patients with dementia? That's a topic of discussion as a host of local musicians gather for the first annual Essence of Jazz Music and Social Work Practice Symposium at Dillard University. Dr. Sam Odom is Assistant Professor of Social Work at Southern University at New Orleans and heads the symposium. Welcome to the program.
Good to be here.
How did you come to study the effects of the music this city is known for in relation to patients suffering from various forms of dementia?
As a social worker, we deal with a variety of clinical issues, and Alzheimer's dementia is one of the few issues that we work with. Primarily, what we look to do and what I have come to understand as it relates to the work is there's little done. And so this is what fascinated me about it. And more importantly, the music, jazz music, particularly in terms of how I've come to understand its influence and the connections between the disorder and how the music impacts, is really where my fascination is and where the work began. There has been some work done in other parts of the country. However, it has not been a significant amount of work done here in New Orleans.
What can we look forward to in the symposium? What will we experience?
This will be an opportunity where we will highlight and utilize the power of music to aid in helping to fight Alzheimer's dementia. We know that music is stored in many areas of the brain and is a part of what makes us human, I might add. Using music associated with personal memories help reach and engage the person with dementia, even as memory fails. And so what we hope to be able to come by and be enlightened is that particular power as a resource, as a benefit. Using personalized music can certainly help to decrease the instance of difficult behaviors, connect with loved ones at any stage of the disease, improve communication, and increase the overall quality of life. And so what we clearly can take away from this is awareness, useful tips that can be utilized with that particular population. And in doing so, we instantly see the spirit become animated, alive, when otherwise despondent or non-respondent, as we have observed in senior living centers, in hospital settings. And so to bring the point home is insight, understanding, awareness, and how we can better provide music as a resource for that particular population to become, at the tender years of life, the very best version of themselves.
Now, you have a host of musicians appearing on the panel. Who will we hear from, and will they tell some of their personal stories?
Not only will we have musicians, we're going to have clinicians as well. Professional music therapists from Loyola University, some social workers, and we will have some professional musicians. Roger Dickerson, who is a classically trained pianist, composer, and arranger. We'll have someone whom I like to dub the drum machine of New Orleans, Herlin Raleigh, a very up-and-coming and very promising trumpeter, Ashlyn Parker. We'll also have a bassist who actually does work with a developmental disabled population, Kevin Morris. We have what I would call, in terms of local musicians, a who's who's list, just to name a few.
And what will be their role?
They're going to talk about music, its impact on the psyche, and specifically as it relates to Alzheimer's dementia. We're going to review and discuss Alive Inside, which is a short film looking at people who suffer with Alzheimer's dementia. We're going to talk about music as a clinical intervention inside and outside of the consultation room. One of the titles that I find very, very exciting, Music, the Evocation of Feelings and Reflections in Various Modes and Settings, weddings, religious ceremonies, military ceremonies such as taps, reveille, death and dying, and second line music. This is where we will look at how music evokes feelings. Everything we do in life, music is connected to that. Those are some of the topics that each of these presenters will tackle. And lastly, we will culminate with the essence of jazz as a genre of music that transcends race, oppression, discrimination, as an art that also embraces diversity, creativity, freedom, which is a reflection of the ethos of social work practice. And so this promises to be a very nicely packaged symposium where people can come and enjoy some very enriching experiences and also be able to take home with them some useful tips, insights on how to better care for their loved ones who are suffering with this crippling disease.
For example,
using music in terms of when the patient isn't responding. For instance, looking back when we experienced our very first date, our high school graduation, our college graduation, our baptism, all of these particular milestones or rites of passage are associated with music. And so when we put the music on the ears of the individual, we're able to take them back to that moment. And that's where they come alive inside. And so we can then facilitate a pathway for communications that otherwise did not exist. And also being able to hear their favorite music, we know it helps them to be able to reconnect with the external world that they were somehow lost to previously due to the Alzheimer's disease.
So you are reconnecting folks with loved ones through music?
Absolutely. Specifically for someone who is perhaps a novice, how I can remain connected to my grandmother, grandfather, how I can remain connected to the past, the present, and more importantly, look to the future through music. And I think that clearly jazz represents that. It's about storytelling and the human experience, the power of music. It's in every facet of our lives, from baptism to death.
Dr. Sam Odom, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Save the date. The first annual Essence of Jazz Music and Social Work Practice Symposium takes place Wednesday, November 29th, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Dillard University, George's Auditorium, 2601 Gentilly Boulevard. That's our show for this week. Support for Inside the Arts comes from the Helles Foundation. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at wwno.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette, Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.